Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope. Hi there. Thanks for joining me. On this show, we are giving it our all, 100%, our best, every time, always. Sounds ambitious, huh? But I'm going to let you in on a little secret early on to set the tone for the show. All you can give is what you have and nothing more. Now, if you let that sink in a while, or let's say over the course of this show, you'll see this is enough. And the knowledge of this fact is the ultimate freedom. Now, I know some of you overachievers out there are thinking, what happened to the 10%? You know, the 10% more, giving 110%. Well, let me clear that up for you. There is no 10%. All is exactly that. All, everything, and nothing more. I appreciate your tenacity and never want you to lose that drive, but let's just concentrate on the totality of this concept. Ready to pour it all out, every drop? I really don't mean to make light of the fact that giving 100% every time to everything you do seems exhausting and actually unrealistic. Even someone as motivated and enthusiastic as I am can see that seems far-fetched. If you're thinking the same thing, then you have a couple of choices. Some of us see things through an all-or-nothing lens, hot or cold, on or off, black or white. With this kind of approach, it's easy to think of this concept and immediately be ready to throw in the towel the minute something happens. Well, I blew it today, so never mind. I'll try again tomorrow. I give up. If this sounds like you, then you can see where getting to the point of 100% consistency in your efforts may seem like a mirage. Before you hit that point, let me let you off the hook and share a revelation I found through a book by Don Miguel Ruiz. You might have heard me mention him a time or two. He wrote a book called The Four Agreements, which has really shaped some new thinking for me. The four agreements are: be impeccable with your word. Don't take anything personally. Don't make assumptions. And always do your best. Now, this agreement, always do your best, is the one that I want to dig in a little deeper. Under any circumstance, always do your best. No more and no less. But keep in mind that your best is never going to be the same from one moment to the next. Everything is alive and changing all the time. So your best will sometimes be high quality, and other times it will not be as good. When you wake up refreshed and energized in the morning, your best will be better than when you're tired at night. Your best will be different when you're healthy as opposed to sick. It will depend on whether you are feeling wonderful and happy or angry and upset. In your everyday moods, your best can change from one moment to the next, from one hour to the next, from one day to another. Your best will also change over time, but keep doing your best. No more and no less than your best. If you're trying too hard to do more than your best, you'll spend more energy than is needed, and in the end, your best will not be enough. When you overdo, you deplete your body and go against yourself, and it will take you longer to accomplish your goal. If you just do your best, there's no way you can judge yourself. And if you don't judge yourself, there's no way that you're going to suffer from guilt, blame, and self-punishment. If you've done your best and your inner judge tries to judge you, you've got the answer. Hey, I did my best. There are no regrets. That is why we always do our best. It's not an easy agreement to keep, but this agreement is really going to set you free. Four agreements are a summary of the mastery of transformation, one of the masteries of the Toltec. The dream of the planet is transformed into your personal dream of heaven. If you do your best always, over and over again, you will become a master of transformation. The knowledge is there. It's just waiting for you to use it. But the first three agreements will only work if you do your best. By doing your best, the habits of misusing your word, taking things personally, and making assumptions will become weaker and less frequent with time. But don't expect that you will always be able to be impeccable with your word. Your routine habits are too strong and firmly rooted in your mind. Hey, just do your best. Don't expect that you will never take anything personally, but you can do your best. Don't expect that you will never make another assumption, but you can certainly do your best. If you break an agreement, begin again tomorrow and again the next day. It will be difficult at first, but each day will become easier and easier until someday you'll discover that you are ruling your life with the four agreements. And you will be surprised by the way that your life has been transformed. Bam! There you go. All you are responsible for is your best and nothing more. On the days that you're struggling and you only have 20% in the tank, give it all. Because 100% of 20% is, you got it, 20%. No longer do you have to throw in the towel on your less than stellar days. You still have an opportunity to give 100% and feel the satisfaction of doing your best. For so long, we've been focused on the glass half empty or half full. How do you see it when you're an optimist or a pessimist? At this point, you're almost afraid to answer. But no matter how much is in the glass, all you have to do is pour it out. All of it. Give it all because that's what you have to give today, and that's enough. You might wrestle with this newfound enlightenment, maybe even push back thinking, how can I do my best when I can't be the best? Maybe 100% of the 20 you have to give is not enough. You need to be perfect, all or nothing. Perfectionism is the voice of the oppressor, the enemy of the people. It will keep you cramped and insane your whole life. That's a quote by Anne Lamott. You might be sitting there secretly thinking, that's me. I can't be happy with enough. I have to have it all. Well, Dr. Eileen Strauss-Cohen helps us understand this challenge in an article she wrote for Psychology Today, How to Let Go of the Need to Be Perfect. You find yourself asking, when will what I do be enough? You wonder, how do I know if I'm truly happy or just settling to be comfortable? You catch yourself constantly striving for more, more money, more stuff, more beauty, more brains, more awards. But no matter how much you get, you will never know if what you desire will help you become your best self or just drive you further down the dissatisfying road of perfection. I know the journey of perfectionism far too well. Every once in a while, when I least expect it, my own perfectionism motivations creep up on me. They come into play mostly when I'm making decisions, working, or interacting with others. It's that feeling you get when you expect things of yourself that you would never expect from others. It's working yourself to exhaustion in hopes that you'll finally feel whole, complete, worthy. It's basing your self-worth on external accomplishments, feeling like you have something to prove all the time. It's piling on the emotions of guilt, burnout, and self-hate. It's always coloring inside the lines and giving yourself the metaphorical whip if you screw up. Perfectionism lives and breathes in your fear of making a mistake. When you're afraid of what might happen, you don't always make the best possible choices. Instead, you limit your options because you believe you'll be unable to handle the outcome of your choices if they happen to be negative. Allowing perfectionism to run the show is like being on a hamster wheel. You just keep going and going and going, even after you've reached your original goal. You increase the stakes every time so that when you do accomplish something, you wonder if you could have done better. Feeling and thinking this way makes perfect sense because our culture puts a ton of pressure on us to be perfect. We're made to feel as there's something wrong with us if we're still single by a certain age, don't make a certain amount of money, don't have a big social media following, or don't look a certain way. In the midst of all that pressure, it's easy to forget all the great, unique things about ourselves. So many people are frustrated because no matter how hard they try, they still feel like nothing they do is good enough. Even after all the external success they've achieved, and they still aren't happy, and they aren't sure why. What seems to be a common thread is that their goals never came from them. When you never feel good enough in the eyes of others, it's hard to build a strong sense of yourself. It's difficult to know what you truly want, what ultimately fills your true purpose. Perfectionism stays alive when you look for other people to give you worth, relying on their opinions to give you a sense of your own value. It's deceptive because other people can't make you feel like enough. That's a decision you have to make for yourself. What's enough and not enough and how far you need to go are more effective when they're determined by your inner values, not someone else's. Needing and lacking approval and acceptance will inevitably lead you to feel that what you do is never enough. You'll spend your life looking to do better and more. Knowing who you are and what you value is vital. Once you have that down, you can make the decision to be enough in every situation you face. And in time, each situation will serve as a way to guide you towards your true self and free you from the need to be perfect. So, how do you let go of perfectionism? And how do you have a strong sense of self? How about change your mindset? Our mindset contains our ideas and views about life, which come from our previous experiences and perceptions of the world. How we look at the world influences our experience in it. That's why everyone's is so different. Our perception becomes our reality. Creating a good enough mindset that isn't filled with unrealistic expectations will help you cultivate a sense of well-being. The first step to feeling like you're enough is changing your mindset and old beliefs about yourself derived from past experiences of what's expected of you. The rest is a process of changing the idea that you need to work harder for approval and instead use that energy to just be enough for yourself. How about build self-reliance? Boy, don't you wish that were just that easy? You aren't born with self-reliance. You gain it through trials and errors while you go through life making your own decisions. We all started developing confidence when we decided to think of ourselves and move forward with our own decisions. Remember, independence? People who act with self-reliance feel more in control of their environment. And feeling this way is an important ingredient of well-being. When what you do is in line with what you believe, your self-esteem and happiness grow. Being self-reliant means doing things for yourself. The more you do for yourself, the better you feel. And the better you feel, the more confident, you see where we're going, and the less compelled you'll feel to be perfect all the time. How about learn to let go? Try to let go of whatever is holding you back from accepting who you are. You probably realize that you aren't what other people say you are. You aren't your pain, your past, or your emotions. It's usually negative ideas about ourselves and hurtful self-talk that get in the way of who we really want to be and push us to never make any mistakes. Make your own decisions. That's it. Start making your own decisions. It isn't necessary to share every problem you encounter with everyone in your life. People do this to get advice, be told what they need to do, and pass their anxiety on to others. As you become more aware of what you want, you'll start knowing the next step to take in your life, and you'll recognize that nobody else has the answers but you. People who don't feel good enough always look to others to make decisions for them. You know just as much as everyone else. In fact, you know more than others do about what's right for you. Remember, you can't hate your way into accepting yourself. Convincing yourself of what a failure you are will never make any situation better, and repeating to yourself that you'll never live up to your potential certainly won't lead you to reach it. It's important for you to remember that you are enough just as you are. And I promise, the more you practice it, the more you'll believe it. Make peace with the now before you feel satisfied with the later. We can't feel totally satisfied with where we're going until we can accept, acknowledge, and appreciate where we are. Make peace with where you are, and your journey towards something new will feel much more peaceful, rewarding, and satisfying. Do you methodically look for evidence that you're a nobody? That you don't deserve acceptance, or that you aren't living up to your potential? If so, I know how demoralizing and demeaning it can be. It will better serve you to focus on progress rather than perfection, and on how far you've come instead of how far you have left to go. One of the biggest pushes towards perfectionism is the need to always get it right. We strive for perfection and huge successes, and when we fall short, we feel worthless. What we don't seem to realize is that working towards our goals and being willing to put ourselves out there are accomplishments within themselves. Give yourself a well-deserved pat on the back for trying, for making progress, and for coming as far as you have. That's just it. Being committed to doing your best is no guarantee you'll win or come out on top every time. Everyone wants to win and succeed, but that's not the point here. The point is you have the freedom to give what you have to give and the opportunity to commit to yourself to doing it every time in every situation. No more excuses. Someone or something gets in your way? Jockey around for a new position. Your first, second, or third attempt failed? Take a look at your approach. Do you have the right timing, resources, effort? Giving in is not giving up. It's simply changing directions. Don't feel it today? Show up anyway and give it all that you have to give in that moment. What about doing your best versus being the best? Well, Remy Blumenfield shares his ideas on this in an article he wrote for Forbes.com. No matter what you're trying to accomplish, with thousands of other people trying to do the same thing, it surely helps to be driven, right? After all, most of the greatest entrepreneurs, politicians, scientists, and artists were perpetually striving to beat their personal best or challenge the status quo. Yet, being driven to succeed should not be confused with the kind of competitive ambition that can consume you. So, do you need to be competitive with others? And what is the essential difference between being the best and doing your best? Let's start by finding out where you are on the spectrum of ambition. Are you someone with a driving need to A, win arguments, exceed other people's standards and expectations, outperform others, innovate for the sake of being ahead, be the best? Or maybe you identify with these. You want to beat your own personal best, push yourself to master new skills, do the very best at what you do, rely on your own drive to be better. Now, if you answered mostly A, you are more competitive with others, put yourself first, and therefore less situated to collaboration. You're in the zone of being the best because you're often distracted by who's in front and who's behind. And because, let's face it, it's harder to know whether you will ever really be the best. It's likely you feel disappointed and stressed out. Whenever your competitiveness surfaces, you might feel tense and anxious in the pit of your stomach. Your heartbeat accelerates and your breathing becomes faster and shallower. But if you answered mostly B, your ambition is the kind favored by corporations. You may be driven, but you're still able to collaborate usefully. You're more about doing your best. Because instead of competing with other people, you're setting your own benchmarks for success. It's likely that you'll feel more relaxed and in control. When you're simply doing your best, you feel excited rather than anxious. There's no tension in your body. You feel present and at ease. Your heartbeat and breathing are normal because you're not in a race. Ambition can be all about achieving success on your own terms, whereas competitiveness means striving to be more successful than others. The key, says psychiatrist and author Dr. Neil Burton, is to pursue healthy ambition, not looking over your shoulder at how others are faring, but simply doing your best. People with a high degree of healthy ambition are those with the insight and strength to control the blind forces of ambition, shaping it so that it matches their interests and ideals. They harness it so that it fires them up without burning them out. So here are six questions to help you with the distinction of doing your best. Okay, number one. Do you accept your own ambition? You may judge all ambition in yourself and others as being ugly. However, if you find yourself feeling irritated or even jealous when other people display signs of being driven, this could be a signal that you haven't yet accepted your own ambitious streak. Are you choosing what you want to be driven towards? It's tiring to have ambition in every arena. Pick what you care about most and focus on that. Do you compete with others all the time or when it serves you? Comparing yourself with others can support you to distinguish your skills and the unique value you can add. But your biggest competitor should always be yourself. Have you got enough ambitious people around you? Befriending and learning from role models and mentors who are smarter and more successful than you will help you expand your sense of possibility. Even if you aren't competing with them, their energy will rub off on you. Talk with them and learn from people different from you. This suggests strategy advisor Jason Ma, who refers to what he calls the power of proximity. Be open to dialogue with acquaintances and even select strangers as you may uncover interesting opportunities. Are you willing to take risks? Ambition takes a willingness to step into fear and anxiety, says psychiatrist Dr. Neil Burton. Some people are better able to tolerate this fear because they are more courageous, committed, or driven and can minimize fear. Ambitious people act with purpose, but allow themselves room to explore, experiment, and discover. Whenever you're next in doubt about whether you're being competitive or ambitious, just ask yourself this: am I really trying to do my best, or is this about my need to be the best? Chances are you'll be able to tell which state you're in just by how you feel in your body. Okay, I can feel this concept sinking in. For me, it gives me a feeling of peace every morning. Instead of being quick to evaluate my efforts, do I feel like climbing Mount Everest today or crawling to my desk? I can just take my time and find gratitude for the things I have in the moment and the things I'll encounter throughout my day. You know, some days are moment to moment. You might start out scaling the tallest mountain only to lose your footing. It's in those times that this concept will help you be mindful of where you are and what you have left to give. With this idea safely in our tool belt, let's explore another eye opener that might help you effectively use the 20% or the 80 that you have to give. And that is the 80-20 rule. Being in business and flying like an eagle most of my career, I've come face to face with this rule on a consistent basis. What I've learned is you can challenge it, trying to bring everything into an unnatural balance, or you can embrace it and use it to your advantage. I am talking about the Pareto Principle. The 80-20 rule is the law of the vital few, which basically means that in many events, 80% of the effects come from 20% of the causes. The Pareto Principle name came from the Italian economist Vilfredo Pareto, who discovered the principle after realizing that approximately 80% of the land in Italy was owned by 20% of the population. And he kept observing the same pattern in other different situations. Vilfredo Federico Damasio Pareto was born in Italy in 1848 and became an important philosopher and economist. After his realization of the 80-20 pattern, Pareto started to think about uneven distribution and discovered that different industries also followed the same pattern when the generalization became a universal truth. Thaisa Fernandez shows us how you can apply the 80-20 rule in your life and work in an article she wrote for Medium.com. The Pareto Principle of 80-20 is the universal truth about the imbalance of inputs and outputs. You don't need to create mathematical formulas, do some complex math, or understand statistics to leverage the 80-20 framework and start using it in your daily work. Let's also keep in mind that 80% and 20% are just indicators. It's a misconception that the number should always be around 80 and 20. They don't necessarily need to be. These numbers are just the baseline. But it really works out a lot. The main point is to find the small things that give you the biggest results. The 80-20 rule is a guide that will help you understand typical distributions no matter what the numbers are. The point isn't the ratio, it's the imbalance, the inequality. We'll dive a little deeper into how you can use the framework, but I'd like to say the answer is in practically everything. The Pareto Principle is not about working less and producing less. It's about working smarter and prioritizing the right things in order to deliver best results and value. So, what does the 80-20 rule mean? Mathematically, the 80-20 rule is followed by a power law distribution for a particular set of parameters. Pareto discovered a pattern with the ratio of 80-20, but in fact, the principle can be represented in different ratios like 90-20, 60-40, and so on. The most interesting thing about the 80-20 rule is the ability to analyze your goals and tasks differently. You will start to tackle what will give you the most results and happiness first. This will help you to focus and, more importantly, handle one task at a time. This will make an immense difference, as we know human beings are not as good at multitasking as we think we are. Think about this framework as a way to help you determine what is vital, important, and will bring 80% of your results. The other 20% you can deprioritize, or you can even create a different plan to achieve it or transfer it. Focus your energy on what brings you value, what you enjoy, and what brings you the most happiness. Strategic planning is essential, and the 80-20 rule can help you stay focused, especially given the constant challenge of limited resources and high expectations. Don't we feel that? Here are some 80-20 rule examples. 80% of problems originate from 20% of projects. 60% of your distractions come from 40% of sources. 70% of customers only use 30% of software features. 90% of complaints are made by 10% of the users. 80% of value is achieved with the first 20% of effort. 85% of the important conversations are from 15% of the emails. So how does it work? Well, we can apply the 80-20 rule to almost any situation, if not all situations. Think about your daily to-dos. Do you know which 20% of your daily tasks give you the most return or happiness? If you knew these answers already, you could start to create a plan to spend more time on those 20% tasks. Now think about how you can reduce, transfer, or even do away with the other 80% of tasks that only bring you 20% of the results. The 80-20 rule can really change the way you plan and accomplish your projects. Understanding this principle is essential to prioritizing your projects, tasks, days, and even your life. This framework can be an important ally for time management in general. So, how can we apply the 80-20 rule to gain more time? The 80-20 rule forces you to ask questions you might never have thought of, and this is amazing. If you learn how to use this framework wisely, it can give you a lot of insight into how you should prioritize your time and projects. After you analyze your priorities and results, you can start putting your focus in the right place. This can be applied in many different aspects of your life, including your work. For example, if 20% of your tasks are bringing 80% of your project results, you can consider making those specific tasks your priority. You can also keep in mind that 80% you can discard, rethink, or transfer to make your life easier. For example, how about deleting the apps you don't use in your phone? How about giving a purpose to the majority of clothes we don't wear? Unsubscribe to 80% of your newsletters, since we tend to really only use 20% of them, and so on. After analyzing your scenario and coming up with your specific ratio, you need to start changing those ratios. You can do that by reducing the amount of time you spend with things that don't give you the majority of the results or happiness, and increasing the amount of time spent on the projects that do. Another thing you can do is evaluate your needs and possessions. Do your wants outweigh your needs? You can ask yourself if tasks or things bring you 80% of the results. Considering this question can give you a lot of ideas and insights. Here are some steps to apply the 80-20 rule. Identify all your daily tasks and weekly tasks. Then identify your key tasks. What are the tasks that give you the most return? Brainstorm on how you can reduce or transfer the other tasks. Create a plan to do more that brings you more value. Use the 80-20 to prioritize any project you're working on. Set a plan to focus on activities that produce the most results. Is your mind spinning? Well, how about this? Here's some ways to set goals based on this rule. First of all, identify your key tasks based on your goals. What's blocking you? Make a list of your constraints. What's standing in your way of your priorities? Clarify and unblock. More clarity will help you have a better vision of your goals and what you need to do in order to achieve them. Removing any obstacles opens the door for more focus. Keep in mind that we want to maximize the value of focusing on tasks that will give you the most return. Use the 80-20 framework. After you have evaluated your goals and tasks using this framework, it's so much easier to focus on the right things. Since you'll be focusing on what will bring more value, you can start to see results faster. And this can be another incentive to continue to focus on what matters most. Work smarter. This should be a constant basis in our daily lives. Evaluate, prioritize, focus, and continuously work. But don't forget, always do your best. With these ideas and your newfound freedom, how could you ever settle for less? Settling means accepting, and accepting means giving up. I don't know about you, but that's not in my vocabulary. I understand that I'm always learning and growing, and to give up on where I am right now in this moment is to not have hope for the future. Hope is not a wish for better days ahead. It's a feeling of expectation and desire for a certain thing to happen. If you want to share encouragementology with a friend who needs to know they are not alone in this journey of self-discovery, you can visit encouragementology.com or anywhere you stream your content to receive this episode and all others. Follow us on Facebook for additional encouragement throughout the week. So I challenge you today, no matter what you have available, give it all. Doing your best meets you where you are and asks for only what you have to give. Evaluate where you're depleted and leverage what offers you the best returns. I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges.
I stumbled through until the path was clear. That's when I found you. How I wound up here.